So we managed to get through counting about 25 families yesterday, and the range was a very large range. So we had as low as 3% survival in some family lines, and I must say, reasonably surprisingly, we had up to 93% survival in our best performing lines. And the, I guess one of the really important things about that best surviving line is it's actually, from our other research that we've done, it's the line we actually predicted to be the best surviving line in terms of POM. So whilst, you know, there's plenty of tough times ahead for the oyster industry, I think this is a really, really positive outcome, and it certainly gives us some hope to, you know, be able to rebuild this industry and get it back on track.
Matt, that would be internationally significant, would it not? 93% survival?
Yeah, look, and again, I've got to stress that this is not a scientific trial. It's a non-replicated trial. In the coming weeks, we have got trials in that are set up more as scientific trials in other sites. We've got stock in Pittwater, and we'll keep building on that data, and we'll be able to get a lot more information. And I think, yeah, it would be pretty significant if we were able to get those numbers locked in a bit better.
This is a huge morale lift for the industry.
I think it gives us hope. I think we all, there's a growing acceptance now that breeding is going to be one of the key tools in re-establishing a sustainable industry into the future. And I think these results, and if they continue to look like they're as promising as they started, then, you know, that really does give industry some hope that we've got the tools there and we can do it.
Matt, you said your work is not an immediate solution, it's a pathway to commercialisation. So let's talk about that pathway. You've got this spread of family lines, some more resistant than others. What do you do now with those family lines of oysters?
The year class that we've initially started collecting data on is our second most recent year class. So it was produced about 12 months ago. So they're actually probably going to be not ideal candidates for commercial broodstock just due to their size and age. So what we've got to do is work out ways that we can fast track their development so that we can get them into commercial settings and a setting where we can do further breeding improvement. So both those things are important. We need to work out how we can do that and how we can fast track it, and also look at other options. So the parents of the lines that produced that standout line are also out in the same area and will be affected, and we will be able to breed from the surviving animals for those. So it's a matter of trying to balance out our broodstock needs, and one of the dangers, I guess, may be that we go and use a whole heap of this broodstock that is quite young and that forces us to use more broodstock, and then we run short. So, but there's a whole host of issues about how we get this stock into hatcheries, how we get them to be free of the virus in the first case, so that they can actually be bred. Will there be vertical transmission of the virus down through the progeny? And there's certainly information from elsewhere in the world that leads us to believe that all these things are possible and we can do them. But, you know, it's such early days at the moment. We've just got to go through the process of collecting all this data and let that inform us as to what our next actions will be.
Let's talk about oyster genetics. What makes them resistant to POMs?
It's just a natural gene in the population. We had families up in New South Wales 4 years ago when the POMs outbreak first hit, and we took the opportunity to get those families into the first affected area, which was the Georges River. And what we saw was differences in the amount of viral loadings within the tissues of the different families. And so that gave us an indication that there was some genetic variation to resistance for this disease. And we did a research project funded through the Seafood CRC on breeding for disease resistance, for POMS resistance. And that showed us that this is actually pretty good trait. It's got quite high heritability, which allows essentially in 101 speak, high heritability means that you're able to change that trait pretty quickly.
And what about the other traits that go with it? I mean, there's a commercialisation, there's a meat quality. What are your thoughts about those qualities in these POMS resistant oysters?
Yeah, well, that same project allowed us to be able to do some, I guess, comparisons to see the correlations between the different traits. And Unfortunately, what we did see was there was a slight negative correlation with meat condition, and it's probably not, it's very slight, so it's not going to make a difference in the short term, but it's probably something we do need to address. But I would suggest at this point in time, in the current climate, that that is an acceptable outcome at this point.
You mentioned EBVs for POMs, estimated breeding values. It's something that we hear about in the meat industry, sheep, meats, lamb.
Yep. Well, look, we have no doubt tried to model our breeding program on the classical approach, and the classical approach and well established is to measure your genetic gains by estimated breeding values. So we've done that, and I guess, you know, the encouraging thing when you get to this point and you really start to see that the payoff from that, when you walk out onto a lease and you see a basket of oysters which are nearly completely dead, and then you you look at their neighbour and that basket of oysters is almost completely alive, and you relate that back to an estimated breeding value and it's well in excess of anything else we've got, you start to say, well, you know, this is undoubtedly working. We have done this, and we've done it without being able to breed from surviving animals, which was, you know, we always accepted was a bit of a weakness, but the fact that we've got to this point using the methodology that we have is really encouraging, and it gives us, you know, great faith that we're going to be able to increase the rate of what we're doing into the future.
Final question, and it's one of the toughest questions, but one that everyone's thinking. What sort of time frames are you looking at?
Yeah, look, initially our aim, and before this whole the POMS outbreak in Tasmania, was to have a brood stock that would achieve 70% resistant progeny to the hatcheries by 2018. As I've sort of said, we've got more tools available now, and the fact that we're able to breed from survivors, we think will speed that up. But also, there's a greater urgency now. This isn't about being prepared for a looming threat. This is a current emergency, and we've got to act accordingly. So, without, you know, being able to put numbers on it, because they will be informed by the data we collect in the coming days and weeks. But yeah, I would think that it's got to be quicker than that. 2018 deadline is no longer acceptable, and we've got to do everything we can to working towards getting an outcome for industry prior to that date.